Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from John Russell, Jill Robbins, Anne Ball, and Brian Lynn. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is John Russell.
Neanderthals may have buried and honored their dead, a new study suggests. The early human ancestors may have even used flowers in burials. Scientists recently announced their discovery in the publication Antiquity. The scientists found the bones of an adult in Shanidar Cave in the Kurdistan area of northern Iraq. The Neanderthal, called Shanidar Z, is believed to have lived up to 70,000 years ago. The individual was possibly in his or her 40s or 50s. Scientists do not yet know the sex of the individual. The cave where the bones were found is already famous in archaeology. In 1960, archaeologist Ralph Selecki discovered the remains of 10 Neanderthals, 7 adults, and 3 children. At the time, small amounts of flower pollen were found in soil around the remains. The discovery led Selecki to propose that Neanderthals buried their dead and even had funeral ceremonies with flowers. Critics later doubted the flower burial explanation. They argued that the pollen could have been modern contamination from people, animals, or insects. Shanidar Z's bones were found in soil containing ancient pollen and plant remains, suggesting the possibility of flower burials. Scientists are now further examining the materials. Scholars have argued for years about whether Neanderthals buried their dead with funeral ceremonies. Emma Pomeroy studies ancient humans at the University of Cambridge. She was the lead writer of the recent study. She said that what is important about the burial is the aim or purpose behind it. You might bury a body for purely practical reasons in order to avoid attracting dangerous scavengers, she said. Pomeroy added that if more is done, it is important because that indicates more complex, symbolic, and abstract thinking, compassion, and care for the dead, and perhaps feelings of mourning and loss. Shanidar Z appears to have been placed in an area cut into the soil. The area has a group of 4 individuals. Graham Barker, a University of Cambridge archaeologist, helped write the study. He said the cave may have been used as a burial place for a long period of time. It seems clear that Shanidar was a special place, with bodies being placed just in one part of a large cave, he said. Neanderthals were more strongly built than modern humans, or Homo sapiens. They lived in Eurasia from about 400,000 years ago until around 40,000 years ago. They then disappeared after modern humans became established. Modern non-African human populations are believed to carry small amounts of Neanderthal genetic material known as DNA. I'm John Russell.
The World Health Organization, or WHO, has the following advice to protect yourself from being infected with the coronavirus or other flu-like diseases. Wash your hands frequently. Clean your hands often and carefully with an alcohol-based hand cleaner, or wash them with soap and water. Washing your hands kills viruses that may be on your hands. Maintain social distancing. Stay at least 1 meter away from anyone who is coughing or sneezing. When someone coughs or sneezes, they release small drops of liquid from their nose or mouth, which may contain the virus. If you are too close, you can breathe in the liquid, including the COVID-19 virus, if the person coughing has the disease. Avoid touching eyes, nose, and mouth. Your hands touch many surfaces where viruses can survive up to 9 days. Once contaminated, hands can carry the virus to your eyes, nose, or mouth. From there, the virus can enter your body and can make you sick. Practice respiratory hygiene. Make sure that you and the people around you cover your mouth and nose with your elbow or facial tissue when you cough or sneeze. Then throw away the used tissue immediately. If you have fever, cough, and difficulty breathing, seek medical care early. Stay home if you feel unwell, even with mild signs of infection, such as headache and slight runny nose, until you recover. If you have a fever, cough, and difficulty breathing, seek medical attention and follow the directions of your local health official. Calling ahead will permit the health official to quickly direct you to the right health facility. This will also help to prevent possible spread of the new coronavirus and other viruses. I'm Jill Robbins.
Meals served to school children in the United States are healthier because of changes to nutrition requirements, a recent U.S. study suggests. The nutrition requirements started during the 2012 to 2013 school year. Since then, breakfasts and lunches served at schools now follow guidelines designed to help fight obesity and other problems linked to poor diets. Schools have been sure to include larger amounts of fruits and vegetables in the meals. They also have been including more whole grain foods, as well as ones that are lower in sodium. Old school lunches were higher in calories and fat. They also included larger amounts of sugar and fewer whole grains. However, new rules proposed by the administration of President Donald Trump could loosen some of those requirements, which were put in place by former President Barack Obama.
Nearly 100,000 schools and institutions feed 30 million children each school day through the school meals programs. The study, released earlier this year, found that school meals had gotten healthier. It also found that more children ate the new school meals, and those who brought their lunch from home generally had healthier food than they did before. The researchers published the report in the Journal of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. Elizabeth Guerin is with Mathematica, a policy research group in Princeton, New Jersey. She was a co-writer of the study. She told Reuters news agency, encouraging children to consume school meals during the school year is an important step in improving children's diets. Guerin added that it is also important to help children to establish a healthy way of eating. Healthier school meals can help them do that.
In the study, researchers examined 1 week of school breakfast and lunch menus from over 800 schools before the 2012 nutrition guidelines took effect. They also looked at 1 week of menus from more than 1,000 schools in 2014. Their findings showed that the Healthy Eating Index scores rose after the new guidelines took effect. The index is a measure that gives points for things like whole foods. It takes away points for empty calories, sugars, and fats. Lunch scores climb from 58% of the most points before the guidelines took effect to 82% after. Breakfast scores moved up from 50% to 70% of the most possible points. One limitation of the study is that researchers looked only at changes in the menus. They did not look at how much of the meals the children actually ate before and after the changes. However, Guerin said that other research suggests food waste does not change much when the menus change.
Sonny Perdue is the Secretary of Agriculture under Trump. In January, he announced proposals to loosen the food rules and let schools have more of a choice in what they serve their students. Perdue said that schools continue to tell us that there is still too much food waste, and that flexibility is needed to provide meals that students want to eat. "We listened, and now we're getting to work," Perdue said in a statement. One of the changes includes permitting students to take only what they want to eat. Some observers say that children throw away too much food because they do not like what they are served. Critics of the proposal say this is likely to mean students will choose less healthy foods.
The new rules are open for public comments until the end of March. There is no set time for when the proposed rules would be put in place. Marlene Schwartz is director of the Rudd Center for Food Policy and Obesity at the University of Connecticut in Hartford. She was co-writer of an editorial published with the study. She told Reuters that the proposed changes by the U.S. Department of Agriculture are a step in the absolute wrong direction. She said they are taking away the incentive for the industry to invest in creating healthier products for schools. I'm Ann Ball.
And I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Franklin Roosevelt's first 3 months as president was one of the most exciting periods in American politics. Roosevelt entered the White House in March 1933. The nation was in crisis. Banks across the country had closed their doors. The Great Economic Depression was at its lowest point. Roosevelt and the Congress moved quickly to help people with little food or money. They launched a series of major economic programs. I'm Doug Johnson with Mario Ritter. We talk about the laws and policies of President Franklin Roosevelt, including those known as the Second New Deal.
Conditions improved within a year after Roosevelt took office. There was no question about that. Banks were open. More people had jobs. Farmers were doing better. And poor people were not so close to disaster as before. However, conditions were far from perfect. 10 million workers still did not have jobs. Young people leaving school were lucky to find any job at all. And most business owners were only earning small profits, if any at all. After the worst crisis was past, some groups of Americans began to attack Roosevelt and his programs. Conservatives were the first to break with the president. They accused Roosevelt of socialist economic policies.
Much more serious to Roosevelt was criticism from reformers within his own party. A number of popular leaders with strong ideas began to attract support from large numbers of Americans. Roosevelt saw his national unity falling apart. Conservatives were accusing him of socialism. Leftist opponents said he was doing too little to end the Depression. He saw that he had to change his path. Roosevelt knew he had little chance to regain the support of conservative Americans. His policies were too progressive. So halfway through his first term as president, he began to support new reforms in an effort to win more support from the left.
The Supreme Court made the president's efforts easier. Early in 1935, the court ruled that several of Roosevelt's earlier programs violated the Constitution and ordered an end to them. Among them were major programs for farmers and industrial planning. The court's decisions forced Roosevelt to create new programs and try new ideas. One of his first new actions was to support a plan for government controls on companies that supplied water and produced electricity. Another was a measure to give jobs to workers. A third new law forced companies doing business with the federal government to pay workers a minimum wage. And the government also began enforcing a new law to control the actions of stock market traders and investment companies. At the same time, Roosevelt began to attack large companies. He spoke about the importance of small businesses in a democracy. He warned the nation that large companies had too much power. And he called for new actions to increase business competition and control large companies.
Roosevelt supported and Congress passed two laws during this period that would change the lives of working Americans for years to come. The first law gave more power to labor unions. The second created a federal system to provide money for workers after they retired. Roosevelt's administration had already supported labor unions in an earlier law, but that law was overruled by the Supreme Court. So, in 1935, the Congress passed a new law called the National Labor Relations Act. The act created a National Labor Relations Group to help negotiate agreements between workers and business owners. It gave all workers the right to join or form a labor union, and it ordered business owners to negotiate with a union if it represented most of the workers. The new law, for the first time, gave unions real power and negotiating rights.
The other very important law passed during this period created the National Social Security System. The law forced every worker and business owner to pay a small amount of money each month to the federal government. In exchange, the government paid money to workers who had retired or lost their jobs. The new law did not serve everyone. Farmers, government workers, and a number of other groups were not included in the system. The plan also did nothing to help people who were already unemployed. A person had to have a job after the new system began and then lose it to get money. However, the National Social Security law established a system that would grow and become a central part of American life.
Roosevelt also supported other new laws during this period that changed the American economy. A banking act gave the nation's central bank, the Federal Reserve Board, new power to control the total amount of money in use. Another law increased taxes for rich people. A third law limited the power of major companies to gain control of local electric utility companies. The new laws openly challenged the power of big companies, big banks, and big money. Roosevelt rejected the idea that government should cooperate with major companies. Instead, he accused many of the companies of ruining the economy and hurting the working man. He called on Congress to help small companies and the average American.
Perhaps the most important change during this period was that Roosevelt became willing to accept a federal budget that was not balanced. He began to agree with the ideas of Mariner Eccles, the head of the Federal Reserve Bank. Eccles believed that government had a duty to spend extra money during times of economic crisis. The extra money, he said, would create jobs for more people. They could buy more goods, and this would increase economic growth. Eccles believed that it was good policy for a government to spend more money than it earned through taxes during such periods. He argued that a growing economy would increase wages and bring in more tax money.
Roosevelt's administration had spent more money than it earned ever since it took office. But the president and his advisors did so only to end the economic crisis. They believed that it was a necessary evil. But Eccles and others told Roosevelt that it was not bad for the nation if the government spent more than it earned. The British economist John Maynard Keynes published an influential book that supported the same policy. And Roosevelt and his top advisors began to accept the new idea.
Roosevelt's economic policies were known as the New Deal. But the many changes he made during this period became known as the Second New Deal. They included some of the most important pieces of legislation in the history of the country, such as the National Labor Relations Act and the Social Security Law. And Roosevelt's willingness to accept an unbalanced budget would be the first step toward federal budget deficits that would grow steadily in the years to come. Budget deficits would jump under President Lyndon Johnson during the war in Vietnam. They would be an important cause of economic inflation in the United States and the world in the 1970s. And Americans would elect Ronald Reagan president in 1980, partly to try to bring federal spending under control. In 1935, however, most Americans agreed with Franklin Roosevelt that budget deficits were necessary to fight the serious economic depression.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.